Jackie laughed. Shit. Luke is still carrying that killing stick. Big-time lawyer now, but the street leaves a mark on you. Guess it's a good thing.
Lawyer?
She looked at him. You never mind, honey. You just come with me, do like I tell you, you be okay. Ahmed merged with the sparse traffic. A pedicab jockey blaring pointlessly at the receding brass bumper with a handheld air horn. Then one manicured, gold-ringed hand on his shoulder. She led him across the sidewalk, past a sleeping huddle of rag-bundled transients, and into the slowly waking world of Hypermart. 14 floors, Jackie said, and Bobby whistled.
All like this?
She nodded, spooning brown crystals of rock sugar into the tan foam atop her coffee glass. They sat on scrolly cast-iron stools at a marble counter in a little booth, where a girl Bobby's age, her hair dyed and lacquered into a kind of dorsal fin, worked the knobs and levers of a big old machine with brass tanks and domes and burners and eagles with spread chrome wings. The countertop had been something else originally. Bobby saw where one end was bashed off in a long, crooked jag to allow it to fit between two green-painted steel pillars. You like it, huh? She sprinkled the foam with powdered cinnamon from a heavy old glass shaker. About as far from Barrytown as you've been some ways. Bobby nodded, his eyes confused by the thousand colors and textures of the things in the stalls themselves. There seemed to be no regularity to anything, no hint of any central planning agency. Crooked corridors twisted off from the area in front of the espresso booth. There seemed to be no central source of lighting either. Red and blue neon glowed beyond the white hiss of a Primus lantern, and one stall, just being opened by a bearded man with leather pants, seemed to be lit with candles, the soft light reflecting off hundreds of polished brass buckles hung against the reds and blacks of old rugs. There was a morning rattle to the place, a coughing and a clearing of throats. A blue Toshiba custodial unit whirred out of a corridor, dragging a battered plastic cart stacked with green plastic bales of garbage. Someone had glued a big plastic doll head to the Toshiba's upper body segment, above the clustered camera eyes and sensors, a grinning, blue-eyed thing once intended to approximate the features of a leading STEM star without violating SenseNet copyrights. The pink head, its platinum hair bound up in a length of pale blue plastic pearls, bobbed absurdly as the robot rolled past. Bobby laughed. This place is okay, he said, and gestured to the girl to refill his cup.
Wait a sec, asshole,
the counter girl said, amiably enough. She was measuring ground coffee into a dented steel hopper on one end of an antique balance.
You get any sleep last night, Jackie, after the show?
Sure, Jackie said and sipped at her coffee.
I danced their second set, then I slept at Jamma's. Hit the couch, you know. Wish I'd got some. Every time Henry sees you dance, he won't let me alone.
She laughed and refilled Bobby's cup from a black plastic thermos.
Well,
Bobby said, when the girl was busy again with the espresso machine.
What next?
Busy man, huh?
Jackie regarded him coolly from beneath the gold-pinned hat brim.
Got places you need to go, people to see?
Well, no, shit, I just mean, well, is this it?
Is what it?
This place. We're staying here?
Top floor. Friend of mine named Jamma runs a club up there. Very unlikely anyone could find you there. And even if they do, it's a hard place to sneak up on. 14 floors of mostly stalls. And a whole lot of these people sell stuff they don't have out in plain view, right? So they're all very sensitive to strangers turning up, anyone asking questions. And most of them are friends of ours, one way or another. Anyway, you'll like it here. Good place for you. Lots to learn. If you remember to keep your mouth shut. How am I going to learn if I don't ask questions? Well, I mean keep your ears open more like it. And be polite. Some tough people in here. But you mind your biz, they'll mind theirs. Beauvoir's probably coming by here late this afternoon. Lucas has gone out to the projects to tell him whatever you learned from the Finn. What did you learn from the Finn, hon? That he's got these three dead guys stretched out on his floor. Says they're ninjas. Bobby looked at her. He's pretty weird. Dead guys aren't part of his usual line of goods. But yeah, he's weird, all right. Why don't you tell me about it? Calmly and in low, measured tones. Think you can do that? Bobby told her what he could remember of his visit to the Finn. Several times she stopped him, asked questions he usually wasn't able to answer. She nodded when he first mentioned Wigan Ludgate. Yeah, she said. Jamma talks about him when he gets going on the old days. Have to ask him. At the end of his recitation, she was lounging back against one of the green pillars, the hat very low over her dark eyes. Well? He asked. Interesting, she said. But that was all she'd say. I want some new clothes, Bobby said when they'd climbed the immobile escalator to the second floor. You got any money? She asked. Shit, he said, his hands in the pockets of the baggy pleated jeans. I don't have any fucking money, but I want some clothes. You and Lucas and Beauvoir are keeping my ass on ice for something, aren't you? Well, I'm tired of this god-awful shirt Rhea palmed off on me, and these pants always feel like they're about to fall off my ass. And I'm here because Two-A-Day, who's a lowlife fuck, wanted to risk my butt so Lucas and Beauvoir could test their fucking software. So you can fucking well buy me some clothes, okay? Okay. She said after a pause. I tell you what. She pointed to where a Chinese girl in faded denim was furling the sheets of plastic that had fenced the dozen steel pipe garment racks hung with clothing. You see Lynn there? She's a friend of mine. You pick out what you want. I'll straighten it out between Lucas and her. Half an hour later, he emerged from a blanket-draped fitting room and put on a pair of Indo-Javanese mirrored aviator glasses. He grinned at Jackie. Real sharp, he said. Oh, yeah. She did a thing with her hand, a fanning movement, as though something nearby were too hot to touch. You didn't like that shirt Rhea loaned you? He looked down at the black t-shirt he'd chosen, at the square hollow decal of cyberspace on his chest. It was done so you seemed to be punching fast forward through the matrix, grid lines blurring at the edges of the decal. Yeah, it was too tacky. Right, Jackie said, taking in the tight black jeans, the heavy leather boots with spacesuit-style accordion folds at the ankles, the black leather garrison belt trimmed with twin lines of pyramidal chrome studs. Well, I guess you look more like the Count. Come on, Count. I got a couch for you to sleep on, up in Jamma's place. He leered at her, thumbs hooked in the front pockets of the black Levi's. Alone, she added. No fear. Chapter 20.
or leaf light. Paco slung the Citroën Dornier down the Chong, along the north bank of the Seine, then up through Les Halles. Marley sank back into the astonishingly soft leather seat, more beautifully stitched than her Brussels jacket, and willed her mind to blankness, lack of affect.
The eyes, she told herself. Only eyes. Your body, a weight pressed evenly back by the speed of this obscenely expensive car.
Humming past the Square des Innocents, where whores dickered with the drivers of cargo hovers in Bleu de Travail, Paco steered effortlessly through the narrow streets.
Why did you say, don't do this to me?
He took his hand from the steering console and tapped his ear bead into position.
Why were you listening?
Because that is my job. I sent a woman up into the tower opposite his, to the 22nd floor, with a parabolic microphone. The phone in the apartment was dead, otherwise we could have used that. She went up, broke into a vacant unit on the west face of the tower, and aimed her microphone in time to hear you say, don't do this to me. And you were alone?
Yes.
He was dead?
Yes.
Why did you say it then?
I don't know.
Who did you feel was doing something to you?
I don't know. Perhaps Alan.
Doing what?
Being dead? Complicating matters? You tell me.
You are a difficult woman.
Let me out.
I will take you to your friend's apartment.
Stop the car.
I will take you to...
I'll walk!
The low silver car slid up to the curb.
I will call you in the...
Good night.
You're certain you wouldn't prefer one of the spas? Asked Mr. Paleologos, thin and elegant as a mantis in his white hopsack jacket. His hair was white as well, brushed back from his forehead with extreme care. It would be less expensive and a great deal more fun. You're a very pretty girl.
Pardon?
Jerking her attention back from the street beyond the rain-streaked window.
A what?
His French was clumsy, enthusiastic, strangely inflected.
A very pretty girl.
He smiled primly.
You wouldn't prefer a holiday in a med cluster? People your own age? Are you Jewish?
I beg your pardon. Jewish, are you? No.
Too bad, he said. You have the cheekbones of a certain sort of elegant young Jewess. I have a lovely discount on 15 days to Jerusalem Prime. A marvelous environment for the price. Includes suit rental, 3 meals per diem, and direct shuttle from the JAL Taurus.
Suit rental?
They haven't entirely established atmosphere in Jerusalem Prime,
Mr. Paleologos said, shuffling a stack of pink flimsies from one side of his desk to the other. His office was a tiny cubicle walled with hologram views of Poros and Macau. She'd chosen his agency for its evident obscurity and because it had been possible to slip in without leaving the little commercial complex in the metro station nearest Andreas.
No, she said. I'm not interested in spas. I want to go here.
She tapped the writing on the wrinkled blue wrapper from a pack of Gauloises.
Well, he said, it's possible, of course, but I have no listing of accommodations. Will you be visiting friends?
A business trip, she said impatiently. I must leave immediately.
Very well, very well,
Mr. Paleologos said, taking a cheap-looking lap terminal from a shelf behind his desk.
Can you give me your credit code, please?
She reached into her black leather bag and took out the thick bundle of new yen she'd removed from Paco's bag while he'd been busy examining the apartment where Alan had died. The money was fastened with a red band of translucent elastic.
I wish to pay cash.
Oh, dear.
Mr. Paleologo said, extending a pink fingertip to touch the top bill, as though he expected the lot of it to vanish.
I see. Well, you understand, I wouldn't ordinarily do business this way. But I suppose something can be arranged.
Quickly, she said. Very quickly.
He looked at her.
I understand. Can you tell me, please?
His fingers began to move over the keys of the lap terminal. The name under which you wish to travel. Chapter 21. Highway Time. Turner woke to the silent house, the sound of birds and the apple trees in the overgrown orchard. He'd slept on the broken couch Rudy kept in the kitchen. He drew water for coffee, the plastic pipes from the roof tank chugging as he filled the pot, put the pot on the propane burner, and walked out to the porch. Rudy's eight vehicles were filmed with dew, arranged in a neat row on the gravel. One of the augmented hounds trotted through the open gate as Turner came down the steps, its black hood clicking softly in the morning quiet. It paused, drooling, swayed its distorted head from side to side, then scrambled across the gravel and out of sight, around the corner of the porch. Turner paused by the hood of a dull brown Suzuki Jeep, a hydrogen cell conversion. Rudy would have done the work himself. Four-wheel drive, big tires with off-road lugs crusted in pale dry river mud. Small, slow, reliable, not much use on the road. He passed two rust-flecked Honda sedans, identical, same year and model. Rudy would be ripping one for parts from the other. Neither would be running. He grinned absently at the immaculate brown and tan paintwork on the 1949 Chevrolet van, remembering the rusted shell Rudy had hauled home from Arkansas on a rented flatbed. The thing still ran on gasoline, the inner surfaces of its engine likely as spotless as the hand-rubbed chocolate lacquer of its fenders. There was half of a Dornier ground effect plane under gray plastic tarps, and then a wasp-like black Suzuki racing bike on a homemade trailer. He wondered how long it had been since Rudy had done any serious racing. There was a snowmobile under another tarp, an old one, next to the bike trailer. And then the stained gray hovercraft, surplus from the war. A squat wedge of armored steel that smelled of the kerosene its turbine burned, its mesh-reinforced apron bag slack on the gravel. Its windows were narrow slits of thick, high-impact plastic. There were Ohio plates bolted to the thing's ram-like bumpers. They were current.
I can see what you're thinking, Sally said, and he turned to see her at the porch rail with the pot of steaming coffee in her hand. Rudy says if it can't get over something, it can anyway get through it.
Is it fast?
Touching the hover's armored flank.
Sure. But you'll need a new spine after about an hour.
How about the law?
Can't much say they like the way it looks, but it's certified street legal.
No law against armor that I know of.
Angie's feeling better, Sally said as he followed her in through the kitchen door. Aren't you, honey?
Mitchell's daughter looked up from the kitchen table. Her bruising, like Turner's, had faded to a pair of fat commas, like painted blue-black tears.
My friend here's a doctor,
Turner said. He checked you out when you were under. He says you're doing okay.
Your brother. He's not a doctor. Sorry, Turner,
Sally said at the stove.
I'm pretty much straightforward.
Well, he's not a doctor, he said, but he's smart. We were worried that Moss might have done something to you. Fixed it so you'd get sick if you left Arizona.
Like a cortex bomb?
She spooned cold cereal from a cracked bowl with apple blossoms around the rim. Part of a set that Turner remembered.
Lord, Sally said. What have you gotten yourself into, Turner?
Good question.
He took a seat at the table. Angie chewed her cereal, staring at him.
Angie, he said. When Rudy scanned you, he found something in your head.
She stopped chewing.
He didn't know what it was. Something someone put there, maybe when you were a lot younger. Do you know what I mean?
She nodded.
Do you know what it is?
She swallowed.
No.
But you know who put it there?
Yes.
Your father?
Yes.
Do you know why?
Because I was sick.
How were you sick?
I wasn't smart enough.
He was ready by noon. The hovercraft fueled and waiting by the chain-link gates.
Rudy had given him a rectangular black ziplock stuffed with new yen, some of the bills worn almost translucent with use.
I tried that tape through a French lexicon, Rudy said, while one of the hounds rubbed its dusty ribs against its legs.
Doesn't work. I think it's some kind of Creole. Maybe African. You want a copy?
No, Turner said. You hang on to it.
Thanks, Rudy said. But no thanks. I don't plan on admitting you were ever here if anybody asks. Sally and I were heading into Memphis this afternoon. Stay with a couple of friends. Dogs will watch the house.
He scratched the animal behind its plastic hood.
Right, boy?
The dog whined and twitched.
I had to train him off coon hunting when I put their infrareds in, he said. There wouldn't have been any coons left in the county.
Sally and the girl came down the porch steps, Sally carrying a broken-down canvas carry-all she'd filled with sandwiches and a thermos of coffee. Turner remembered her in the bed upstairs and smiled. She smiled back. She looked older today, tired. Angie had discarded the blood-stained Moss Neotech t-shirt in favor of a shapeless black sweatshirt Sally had found for her. It made her look even younger than she was. Sally had also managed to incorporate the remaining bruises into a baroque job of eye makeup that clashed weirdly with her kid's face and baggy shirt. Rudy handed Turner the key to the hovercraft.
I had my old Cray cook me a précis of recent corporate news this morning. One thing you should probably know is that Moss Biolabs has announced the accidental death of Dr. Christopher Mitchell.
Impressive, how vague those people can be.
And you just keep the harness on real tight, Sally was saying. Or your ass will be black and blue before you hit that Statesboro bypass.
Rudy glanced at the girl, then back at Turner. Turner could see the broken veins at the base of his brother's nose. His eyes were bloodshot, and there was a pronounced tick in his left eyelid.
Well, I guess that's it. Funny, but I come to figure I wouldn't see you again. Kind of funny to see you back here.
Well, Turner said, you've both done more than I'd any right to expect.
Sally glanced away.
So, thanks. I guess we better go.
He climbed up into the cab of the hover, wanting to be gone. Sally squeezed the girl's wrist, gave her the carry-all, and stood beside her while she climbed up the two hinged footrests. Turner settled into the driver's seat.
She kept asking for you, Rudy said. After a while it got so bad the endorphin analogs couldn't really cut the pain, and every 2 hours or so she'd asked where you were, when you were coming.
I sent you money, Turner said.
enough to take her to Chiba. The clinics there could have tried something new. Rudy snorted.
Chiba? Jesus. She was an old woman. What the hell good would it have done, keeping her alive in Chiba for a few more months? What she mainly wanted was to see you.
It didn't work out that way. Turner said as the girl got into the seat beside his and placed the bag on the floor between her feet. Be seeing you, Rudy. He nodded. Sally.
So long. Sally set her arm around Rudy. Who were you talking about?
Angie asked as the hatch came down. Turner put the key in the ignition and fired up the turbine, simultaneously inflating the apron bag. Through the narrow window at his side, he saw Rudy and Sally back quickly away from the hover, the hound cowering and snapping at the noise of the turbine. The pedals and hand controls were oversized, designed to permit ease of operation for a driver wearing a radiation suit. Turner eased them out through the gates and swung around on a wide patch of gravel drive. Angie was buckling her harness.
My mother, he said.
He revved the turbine and they jolted forward.
I never knew my mother, she said.
And Turner remembered that her father was dead, and that she didn't know it yet. He hit the throttle, and they shot off down the gravel drive, barely missing one of Rudy's hounds. Sally had been right about the thing's ride. There was constant vibration from the turbine. At 90 kilometers per hour, on the skewed asphalt of the old state highway, it shook their teeth. The armored apron bag rode the broken surfaces heavily. The skim effect of a civilian sport model would only be possible on a perfectly smooth, flat surface. Turner found himself liking it, though. You pointed, eased back the throttle, and you went. Someone had hung a pair of pink, sun-faded foam dice above the forward vision slit, and the whine of the turbine was a solid thing behind him. The girl seemed to relax, taking in the roadside scenery with an absent, almost contented expression. And Turner was grateful that he wasn't required to make conversation. You're hot, he thought, glancing sidelong at her. You're probably the single most hotly pursued little item on the face of the planet today. And here I am, hauling you off to the sprawl in Rudy's kid stuff war wagon, no fucking idea what I'm going to do with you now. Or who it was zapped them all. Run it through, he told himself. As they swung down into the valley. Run it through again. Eventually something'll click. Mitchell had contacted Hosaka, said he was coming over. Hosaka hired Conroy and assembled a medical crew to check Mitchell for kinks. Conroy had put the teams together, working with Turner's agent. Turner's agent was a voice in Geneva, a telephone number. Hosaka had sent Allison in to vet him in Mexico. Then Conroy had pulled him out. Weber, just before the shit hit the fan, had said that she was Conroy's plant at the site. Someone had jumped them, as the girl was coming in, flares and automatic weapons. That felt like Moss to him. It was the sort of move he'd expect, the sort of thing his hired muscle was there to deal with. Then, the white sky. He thought about what Rudy had said about a railgun. Who? And the mess in the girl's head. The things Rudy had turned up on his tomograph and his NMR imager. She said her father had never planned on coming out himself.
No company,
she said to the window. How's that?
You don't have a company, do you? I mean, you work for whoever hires you.
That's right.
Don't you get scared?
Sure, but
Not because of that.
We've always had the company. My father said I'd be all right. That I was just going to another company.
You'll be fine. He was right. I just have to find out what's going on. Then I'll get you where you need to go.
To Japan?
Wherever.
Have you been there?
Sure.
Would I like it?
Why not?
Then she lapsed into silence again, and Turner concentrated on the road.
It makes me dream,
she said, as he leaned forward to turn on the headlights, her voice barely audible above the turbine.
What does?
He pretended to be lost in his driving, careful not to glance her way.
The thing in my head. Usually it's only when I'm asleep.
Yeah?
Remembering the whites of her eyes in Rudy's bedroom, the shuddering, the rush of words in a language he didn't know.
Sometimes when I'm awake, it's like I'm jacked into a deck, only I'm free of the grid, flying, and I'm not alone there. The other night I dreamed about a boy, and he'd reached out, picked up something, and it was hurting him, and he couldn't see that he was free, that he only needed to let go. So I told him, and for just a second I could see where he was, and that wasn't like a dream at all, just this ugly little room with a stained carpet. And I could tell he needed a shower and feel how the insides of his shoes were sticky because he wasn't wearing socks. That's not like the dreams.
No?
No. The dreams are all big, big things, and I'm big too, moving with the others.
Turner let his breath out as the hover whined up the concrete ramp to the interstate, suddenly aware that he'd been holding it.
What others?
The bright ones.
Another silence.
Not people.
You spend much time in cyberspace, Andrew? I mean, jacked in with a deck?
No, just school stuff. My father said it wasn't good for me.
He say anything about those dreams?
Only that they were getting realer. But I never told him about the others.
You want to tell me? Maybe it'll help me understand, figure out what we need to do.
Some of them tell me things. Stories. Once there was nothing there. Nothing moving on its own, just data and people shuffling it around. Then something happened and it knew itself. There's a whole other story about that. A girl with mirrors over her eyes and a man who was scared to care about anything. Something the man did helped the whole thing know itself. And after that, it sort of split off into different parts of itself. And I think the parts are the others. The bright ones. But it's hard to tell because they don't tell it with words exactly.
Turner felt the skin in his neck prickle. Something coming back to him up out of the drowned undertow of Mitchell's dossier. Hot, burning shame in a hallway. Dirty cream paint peeling. Cambridge, the graduate dorms. Where were you born, Angie?
England. Then my father got into Moss, we moved. To Geneva.
Somewhere in Virginia, he eased the hovercraft over onto the gravel shoulder and out into an overgrown pasture. Dust from the dry summer swirling out behind them as he swung them left and into a stand of pine. The turbine died as they settled into the apron bag.
We might as well eat now, he said, reaching back for Sally's canvas carryall. Angie undid her harness and unzipped the black sweatshirt. Under it she wore something tight and white, a child's smooth tanned flesh, showing the scoop neck above young breasts. She took the bag from him and began unwrapping the sandwiches Sally had made for him.
What's wrong with your brother? She asked, handing him half a sandwich.
How do you mean?
Well, there's something he drinks all the time, Sally said. Is he unhappy?
I don't know, Turner said, hunching and twisting the aches out of his neck and shoulders. I mean, he must be, but I don't know exactly why. People get stuck sometimes.
You mean when they don't have companies to take care of them?
She bit into her sandwich. He looked at her. Are you putting me on? She nodded, her mouth full, swallowed.
A little bit. I know that a lot of people don't work for Moss. Never have and never will. You're one. Your brother's another. But it was a real question. I kind of liked Rudy, you know? But he just seemed so...
screwed up. He finished for her, still holding a sandwich. Stuck. What it is, I think there's a jump some people have to make sometimes, and if they don't do it, then they're stuck good. And Rudy never did it.
Like my father wanting to get me out of Moss, is that a jump?
No. Some jumps you have to decide on for yourself. Just figure there's something better waiting for you somewhere. He paused, feeling suddenly ridiculous, and bit into the sandwich.
Is that what you thought?
He nodded, wondering if it were true.
So you left and Rudy stayed.
He was smart. Still is. And he'd rolled up a bunch of degrees, did it all on the line. Got a doctorate in biotechnology from Tulane when he was 20, a bunch of other stuff. Never sent out any resumes, nothing. We'd have recruiters turn up from all over and he'd bullshit them, pick fights. I think he thought he could make something on his own. Like those hoods on the dogs. I think he's got a couple of original patents there, but... anyway, he stayed there. Got into dealing and doing hardware for people. And he was hot stuff in the county. And our mother got sick. She was sick for a long time, and I was away.
Where were you?
She opened the thermos, and the smell of coffee filled the cabin. As far away as I could get, he said, startled by the anger in his voice. She passed him the plastic mug filled to the brim with hot black coffee. How about you? You said you never knew your mother.
I didn't. They split when I was little. She wouldn't come back in on the contract unless he agreed to cut her in on some kind of stock plan. That's what he said anyway.
So what's he like? He sipped coffee, then passed it back. She looked at him over the rim of the red plastic mug, her eyes ringed with Sally's makeup.
You tell me, she said, or else ask me in 20 years. I'm 17, how the hell am I supposed to know?
He laughed. You're starting to feel a little better now.
I guess so, considering the circumstances.
And suddenly he was aware of her in a way he hadn't been before, and his hands went anxiously to the controls. Good. We still have a long way to go. They slept in the hovercraft that night, parked behind the rusting steel lattice that had once supported a drive-in theater screen in southern Pennsylvania. Turner's parka spread on the armor plate floorboards below the turbine's long bulge. She sipped the last of the coffee, cold now, as she sat in the square hatch opening above the passenger seat,
watching the lightning bugs pulse across a field of yellowed grass. Somewhere in his dreams, still colored with random flashes from her father's dossier, she rolled against him, her breasts soft and warm against his bare back, through the thin fabric of her t-shirt, and then her arm came over him to stroke the flat muscles of his stomach. But he lay still, pretending to a deeper sleep, and soon found his way down into the darker passages of Mitchell's Biosoft, where strange things came to mingle with his own oldest fears and hurts, and woke at dawn to hear her singing softly to herself from her perch on the roof hatch. My daddy, he's a handsome devil, got a chain about 9 miles long, and from every link a heart does dangle of another maid he's loved and wronged.
Chapter 22 Jammers. Jammers was up 12 more flights of dead escalator and occupied the rear third of the top floor. Aside from Leon's place, Bobby had never seen a nightclub, and he found Jammers both impressive and scary. Impressive because of its scale and what he took to be the exceptional quality of the fittings, and scary because a nightclub by day is somehow innately unreal. Witchy. He peered around, thumbs snagged in the back pockets of his new jeans, while Jackie conducted a whispered conversation with a long-faced white man in rumpled blue coveralls. The place was fitted out with dark ultra-suede banquettes, round black tables, and dozens of ornate screens of pierced wood. The ceiling was painted black, each table faintly illuminated by its own little recessed flood aimed straight down out of the dark. There was a central stage, brightly lit now with work lights strung on yellow flex, and in the middle of the stage, a set of cherry-red acoustic drums. He wasn't sure why, but it gave him the creeps, some sidelong sense of a half-life, as though something was about to shift just at the edge of his vision.
Bobby, Jackie said, come over here and meet Jammer.
He crossed the stretch of plain dark carpet with all the cool he could muster and faced the long-faced man, who had dark thinning hair and wore a white evening shirt under his coveralls. The man's eyes were narrow, the hollows of his cheeks shadowed with a day's growth of beard.
Well, the man said, you want to be a cowboy?
He was looking at Bobby's t-shirt, and Bobby had the uncomfortable feeling that he might be about to laugh.
Jammer was a jockey, Jackie said. Hot as they come, weren't you, Jammer?
So they say,
Jammer said, still looking at Bobby.
Long time ago, Jackie.
How many hours you logged running? He asked Bobby. Bobby's face went hot.
Well, one, I guess.
Jammer raised his bushy eyebrows.
Gotta start somewhere.
He smiled, his teeth small and unnaturally even and, Bobby thought, too numerous.
Bobby, Jackie said, why don't you ask Jammer about this wig character the Finn was telling you about?
Jammer glanced at her, then back to Bobby.
You know the Finn? For a hot dogger, you're in pretty deep, aren't you?
He took a blue plastic inhaler from his hip pocket and inserted it in his left nostril, snorted, then put it back in his pocket.
Ludgate. The wig. Finn's talking about the wig. Must be in his dotage.
Bobby didn't know what that meant, but it didn't seem like the time to ask.
Well, Bobby ventured, this wig's up in orbit somewhere, and he sells the Finn stuff sometimes.
No shit, well, you could have fooled me. I would have told you the wig was either dead or drooling. Crazier than your usual cowboy, you know what I mean? Batshit. Gone. Haven't heard of him in years.
Jammer, Jackie said. I think it's maybe best if Bobby just tells you the story. Beauvoir's due here this afternoon, and he'll have some questions for you, so you better know where things stand.
Jammer looked at her. Well, I see. Mr. Beauvoir's calling in that favor, is he?
Can't speak for him, she said, but that would be my guess. We need a safe place to store the count here.
What count?
Me, Bobby said. That's me.
Great, Jammer said, with a total lack of enthusiasm. So come on back into the office.
Bobby couldn't keep his eyes off the cyberspace deck that took up a third of the surface of Jammer's antique oak desk. It was matte black, a custom job, no trademarks anywhere. He kept craning forward while he told Jammer about Two-A-Day and his attempted run, about the girl feeling thing and his mother getting blown up. It was the hottest looking deck he'd ever seen, and he remembered Jackie saying that Jammer had been such a shit-hot cowboy in his day. Jammer slumped back in his chair when Bobby was finished.
You want to try it? He asked. He sounded tired.
Try it?
The deck. I think you might want to try it. It's something about the way you keep rubbing your ass on the chair. Either you want to try it or you got to piss bad.
Shit, yeah. I mean, yeah, thanks, yeah, I would.
Why not? No way for anybody to know it's you and not me, right? Why don't you jack in with him, Jackie? Kind of keep track.
He opened a desk drawer and took out two trode sets.
But don't do anything, right? I mean, just buzz on out and spin. Don't try to run any numbers. I owe Beauvoir and Lucas a favor, and it looks like how I'm paying it back is by helping keep you intact.
He handed one set of trodes to Jackie, the other to Bobby. He stood up, grabbed handles on either side of the black console, and spun it around so it faced Bobby.
Go on. You'll cream your jeans. Thing's 10 years old, and it'll still wipe ass on most anything. Guy name of Automatic Jack built it straight up from scratch. He was Bobby Quine's hardware artist once. The two of them burnt the blue lights together, but that was probably before you were born.
Bobby already had his trodes on. Now he looked at Jackie.
You ever jacked tandem before?
He shook his head.
Okay. We'll jack. But I'll hang off your left shoulder. I say jack out, jack out. You see anything funny, it'll be because I'm with you, understand?
He nodded. She undid a pair of long, silver-headed pins at the rear of her fedora and took it off, putting it down on the desk beside Jammer's deck. She slid the trodes on over the orange silk headscarf and smoothed the contacts against her forehead.
Let's go, she said.
Now and ever was fast forward. Jammer's deck jacked up so high above the neon hot cores, a topography of data he didn't know. Big stuff, mountain high, sharp and corporate in the non-place that was cyberspace.
Slow it down, Bobby.
Jackie's voice, low and sweet beside him in the void.
Jesus Christ, this thing's slick!
Yeah, but damp it down. The rush isn't any good for us. You want to cruise, keep us up here, and slow it down.
He eased off on forward until they seemed to coast along. He turned to the left, expecting to see her there, but there was nothing.
I'm here, she said. Don't worry.
Who is Quine?
Quiet? Some cowboy Jamma knew. He knew them all in his day.
He took a right angle left at random, pivoting smoothly at the grid intersection, testing the deck for response. It was amazing, totally unlike anything he'd felt before in cyberspace.
Holy shit! This thing makes an Ono Sendai look like a kid's toy!
It's probably got OS circuitry in it. That's what they used to use, Jamma says. Takes us up a little more.
They rose effortlessly through the grid, the data receding below them.
There isn't a hell of a lot to see up here,
he complained.
Wrong. You see some interesting stuff, you hang out long enough in the blank parts.
The fabric of the Matrix seemed to shiver, directly in front of them.
Jackie?
Stop here. Hold it. It's okay. Trust me.
Somewhere, far away, his hands moving over the unfamiliar keyboard configuration. He held them steady now, while a section of cyberspace blurred, grew milky.
What is Danbala ab Montele?
The voice said, harsh in his head, and in his mouth a taste like blood.
Danbala is riding her.
He knew somehow what the words meant, but the voice was iron in his head. The milky fabric divided, seemed to bubble, became two patches of shifting gray.
Legba, she said. Legba in Ugu Ferai, god of war. Papa Ugu, Saint Jacques Major, vive la vieille.
Iron laughter filled the matrix, sawing through Bobby's head.
Ma petite tumisée actusion,
said another voice, fluid and quicksilver and cold.
Si, papa, she has come here to throw away her bad luck.
And then that one laughed as well, and Bobby fought down a wave of sheer hysteria as the silver laughter rose through him like bubbles.
Has she bad luck, the horse of Danbala?
Boomed the iron voice of Ugu Fere, and for an instant Bobby thought he saw a figure flicker in the gray fog. The voice hooted its terrible laughter.
Indeed, indeed, but she knows it not. She is not my horse, no, else I would cure her luck.
Bobby wanted to cry, to die, anything to escape the voices, the utterly impossible wind that had started to blow out of the gray warps, a hot, damp wind that smelled of things he couldn't identify.
And she calls praise on the Virgin. Hear me, little sister. La Vieille draws close indeed. Yes, said the other. She moves through my province now. I who rule the roads, the highways. But I, Ugu Ferai, tell you that your enemies draw near as well. To the gate, sister, and beware.
And then the gray areas faded, dwindled, shrank.
Check us out,
she said, her voice small and distant. And then she said,
Lucas is dead.
Jammer took a bottle of scotch from his desk drawer and carefully poured 6 centimeters of the stuff into a plastic highball glass. You look like shit, he said to Jackie, and Bobby was startled by the gentleness in the man's voice. They'd been jacked out for at least 10 minutes, and nobody had said anything at all. Jackie looked crushed and kept gnawing at her lower lip. Jammer looked either unhappy or angry, Bobby wasn't sure.
How come you said Lucas was dead?
Bobby ventured, because it seemed to him that the silence was tilting up in Jammer's cramped office like something that could choke you. Jackie looked at him and didn't seem to focus.
They wouldn't come to me like that if Lucas were alive, she said. There are pacts, agreements. Legba is always invoked first, but he should have come with Danbala. His personality depends on the Loa he manifests with. Lucas must be dead.
Jammer pushed the glass of whiskey across the desk, but Jackie shook her head. The trode set still riding her forehead, chrome and black nylon. He made a disgusted face, pulled the glass back and downed it himself.
What a load of shit. Things made a lot more sense before you people started screwing around with them.
We didn't bring him here, Jammer, she said. They were just there, and they found us because we understood them.
Same load of shit, Jammer said wearily. Whatever they are, wherever they came from, they just shaped themselves to what a bunch of crazed spades wanted to see. You follow me? There's no way in hell there'd be anything out there that you had to talk to in fucking Bush Haitian. You and your voodoo cult. They just saw that, and they saw a setup. And Beauvoir and Lucas and the rest, they're businessmen first. And those goddamn things know how to make deals. It's a natural.
He tightened the cap on his bottle and put it back in the drawer.
You know, hon, it could just be that somebody very big, with a lot of muscle on the grid, they're just taking you for a ride. Projecting those things, all that shit. And you know it's possible, don't you?
Don't you, Jackie? No way, Jackie said, her voice cold and even. But how I know that's not anything I can explain.
Jammer took a black slab of plastic from his pocket and began to shave.
Sure,
he said. The razor hummed as he worked on the line of his jaw.
I lived in cyberspace for 8 years, right? Well, I know there wasn't anything out there, not then. Anyway, you want me to phone Lucas, set your mind at ease one way or the other? You got the phone number for that Rolls of his?
No, Jackie said. Don't bother. Best we lay low till Beauvoir turns up.
She stood pulling off the trodes and picking up her hat.
I'm going to lie down, try to sleep. You keep an eye on Bobby.
She turned and walked to the office door. She looked as though she were sleepwalking, all the energy gone out of her.
Wonderful,
Jammer said, running the shaver along his upper lip.
You want a drink?
He asked Bobby.
Well, Bobby said, it's kind of early.
For you, maybe.
He put the razor back in his pocket. The door closed behind Jackie. Jammer leaned forward slightly.
What do they look like, kid? You get a make?
Just kind of grayish, fuzzy.
Jammer looked disappointed. He slouched back in his chair again.
I don't think you can get a good look at him unless you're part of it.
He drummed his fingers on the chair arm.
You think they're for real?
Well, I wouldn't want to try messing one around.
Jammer looked at him.
No? Well, maybe you're smarter than you look there. I wouldn't want to try messing one around myself. I got out of the game before they started turning up.
So what do you think they are?
Ah, still getting smarter. Well, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think I can swallow them being a bunch of Haitian voodoo gods, but who knows?
He narrowed his eyes.
Could be they're virus programs that have gotten loose in the Matrix and replicated and gotten really smart. That's scary enough.